Lines are now bridge.
Great, thank you. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the HITECH Health Information Technology Advisory Committee Task Force for Health IT for the Care Continuum. It's a long title there, but this is the now the fourth kickoff we've had for the task force groups that are charged with providing recommendations to ONC on their proposed rule for the 21st Century Cures Act. We have a full agenda today, so we will go ahead and get started with welcome and introductions, but first we will take roll call. Carolyn Peterson.
I'm here. Good morning.
Chris Lehman.
Present. Good morning.
Good morning. Erin Mary.
Good morning.
Good morning. Raj Ratwani. Lee Waldron.
Good morning.
Chip Hart. I thought I heard Chip dial in. And Susan Cressley.
I'm present.
Perfect. With that, I would like to turn it over to our co-chairs, Carolyn Peterson and Chris Lehman, for a few opening remarks, and then we'll do a round of introductions.
Good morning, everyone. I am so pleased we are able to start convening this task force. This is really, really important work that we have ahead of us, and I am really grateful that you will come and join us and help us to help ONC further the interests of our pediatric patients and their parents and caregivers. Thank you. I really look forward to working with you. Chris?
Good morning, everybody. I can only echo what Carolyn says. This is important work. This has been work that has been sorely needed, and we're glad we are at the stage. Electronic health records for children, for the use in children, requires specific functionalities and requirements, and we are glad that not only was this recognized in the 21st Century Cures Act, but is now coming to a stage where we will be heading to a voluntary certification. I'm very appreciative of everybody who is on this task force and will help us go in the right direction. Thank you.
Great. So why don't we start with a round of introductions? I know we have a number of ONC support staff as well as our individual members. So why don't we start with the our actual task force members who are on the line? We've heard from Carolyn and Chris. Erin, would you like to introduce yourself? Are you on mute?
Yeah, I'm on mute. Hello.
Yep.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you now.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Hey, this is Erin Mary. I'm the CIO for University of Texas at Austin, Bell Medical School and UT Health Austin. And we have a very large pediatric practice within our facility. So I look forward to this this committee and moving the ball forward. Thank you.
Great. And I don't think Raj is on the line yet. Steve?
Hi. Sorry. I'm used to multiple Steves on meetings anymore. I'm Steve Waldron. I'm Vice President, Chief Medical Informatics Officer at the American Academy of Family Physicians. About 71,000 of our members, most of those see kids, and look forward to helping push this along.
Are you on mute, maybe, Susan?
I didn't hear the introduction. Sorry. Sue Cressley. Sue's fine. I'm sort of a three-legged stool in that I still am in a private practice outside of Philadelphia, which uses innovative health IT and has since 2004. I also am in some leadership roles at the American Academy of Pediatrics, including our Child Health Informatics Task Force. And I am the medical director of Office Practicum, which is a pediatric-specific electronic health record. And I'm really excited that I can pull all this together so that we can improve the care of our kids. Thanks.
Thank you, Sue. And I do believe we have Chip on the line now.
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry about that earlier. And also, we're Northern Vermont's experiencing a big internet outage, so who knows? I could even just fall off suddenly. My name is Chip Hart. I work for PCC. We are, I think, Sue, it's fair to say, we're the other pediatric EHR vendor in the ambulatory space. We've been in this market for a very, very long time, and some of us go all the way back to CCHIT days of helping create better IT solutions for pediatricians to help take care of kids. So we're really, really excited to be able to help with this.
Great, thanks. And I'll turn over to our ONC team. Again, I'm Lord Ritchie. I'm the designated federal officer for the full HITECH committee. And I will turn it over to, starting with our staff leads, Stephanie Lee.
Hi, everyone. My name is Stephanie. I'm staff lead. I am a policy analyst here at ONC in the Regulatory Affairs Division, and I'm very excited to work on this task force. Thanks.
Sam?
Hi, good morning. I'm Samantha, or Sam Meckler, in the Immediate Office of Policy at ONC and a policy advisor here, and very excited to have the opportunity to work with everyone here.
Great. Cassandra?
Good morning, everyone. I'm Cassandra Hadley. I am the backup and support to the HITECH and the task forces. I'm also a public health analyst here at ONC. Thank you.
And do we have Zoe on the line?
Yeah, hi, Zoe Barber. I'm a policy advisor in the Regulatory Affairs Division here at ONC. I'll be supporting Sam, Stephanie, and Cassandra.
Anyone else from ONC that I missed?
This is Al Taylor. I'm in the Office of Technology at ONC. I provide the technical and interoperability standards advisory support to this effort.
Thank you, Al. Anyone else? Okay, I will turn it back to our chairs, Kristen, Carolyn.
Great, thanks, Lauren. Could we have the next slide, please? I will now ask our representative from ONC to walk us through the charge.
Hi, this is Sam. And I hope everyone has the slide in front of them. Does anyone have challenges with web access this morning?
Yes, I do, but I've got the slide, so I'm sure
you
I can follow.
You have the decks. Okay, yep. So we'll be sure to tell you the title. This is the Health IT for the Care Continuum Task Force Charge. So on the top, we have the overarching charge, focused on providing recommendations on our approach, recommendations, and the identified 2015 edition certification criteria to support pediatric care and practice settings, related criteria to support multiple care and practice settings, and also there is a request for information in the care continuum section of the MPRM focused on how Health IT can support the treatment and prevention of opioid use disorder. Specifically, we're seeking recommendations on the following, and we broke this out by sub-bullets. On later slides, we have some specific targeted questions to help focus these charge elements. I just want to make sure everyone can hear me okay. There's a little bit of feedback.
I'm good.
We can hear you.
Okay, super. Fabulous. Okay, so there are 10 ONC recommendations to support the voluntary certification of Health IT for pediatric care, and we would appreciate review and input on whether any of those 10 recommendations should be removed as a recommendation to include for pediatric health IT voluntary certification criteria. We also identify 2015 edition certification criteria to support the certification of health IT for pediatric care and practice settings. This correlates to the technical worksheets, and we will talk about that. That is also the third bullet. There are specific questions in those technical worksheets, which will align with the charge activities There are four questions, and there are three that we will highlight and focus on later in the slides. So this part of the charge is really involving working through some of the scoped questions on those worksheets. We particularly want to call out that we're interested in recommendations that focus on the 2015 edition data segmentation for privacy and the consent management for API certification criteria. There's existing DS4P or data segmentation for privacy criteria in the 2015 edition, and there are also proposals in our rule regarding this standard and also a FHIR-based API segmentation proposal. This is, we believe, specifically of value and interest to the pediatric and opioid use disorder use case, and so we wanted to highlight this as part of the charge, as there'll be targeted questions that align both with the pediatric section of the care continuum in the rule and also the request for information on opioid use disorder prevention and treatment. And then the last part of this charge really refers to the overall request for information on opioid use disorder and treatment, which is part of, again, the care continuum section. And we have targeted questions to focus on in other parts of this presentation that we will highlight as well. I'd like to invite Caroline or Dr. Lehman. Chris, any clarifying comments on the charge?
Yeah, just one comment. So this is going to be a little bit of a zigzag for this committee. I think it's very clear that the first two specific charges, they are related, and so are the pediatric technical worksheets. But connection to the data segmentation for privacy is the adolescent population and the need for their specific access to data. So it kind of falls within the expertise of this committee. As for the opioid use disorder, this group has a lot of expertise when it comes to care of children. I think one of the things that we will focus on in addition to the treatment and prevention is also the long-term follow-up of neonatal patients with neonatal abstinence syndrome and long-term assessment of outcomes. So that kind of falls in there. It's not specifically in there, but I wouldn't be surprised if this group ends up going into this direction. But if you look at it from a holistic point of view, all of these issues fall into the interests of people who take care in one form or another of pediatric patients. So I'm very excited about the composition of this group and love the fact that we have family practice represented as well as pediatrics and pediatric vendors. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other clarifying comments or questions on the charge? Chris did reference NAS, and we do have a specific questions that align to that topic that we will get to shortly.
Okay, should we move to the next slide?
Okay. Thank you. I think what I'd like to do, this slide and the next slide provide some key content and overview on health IT for pediatric care and practice settings. This is information we also have available on our website. What I'd like to do is, as background, we provided the preamble to the rule, Health IT for Care Continuum. I'd like to take a minute or two to walk through some of the key content in that preamble, and then we can circle back to these slides that provide a good summary and overview. So Section 4001B1 of the Cures Act instructs the National Coordinator to encourage KEEP or recognize through existing authorities the voluntary certification of health IT under the program for use in medical specialties and sites of service for which no such technology is available or where more technological advancement or integration is needed. Our approach for addressing this breaks into three parts. First, ONC analyzes existing certification criteria to identify how such criteria may be applicable for medical specialties and sites of service. Second, we focus on the real-time evaluation of existing and emerging standards to determine applicability to medical specialties and sites of service, as well as to the broader care continuum, including the evaluation of such standards for inclusion and the ONC Interoperability Standards Advisory. And third, we may work in collaboration with stakeholders to support the development of informational resources for medical specialties and sites of service for which ONC identifies a need to advance the effective implementation of certified health IT. For health IT for pediatric settings, located in Section 4000B3 of the CURES Act, Health Information Technology for Pediatrics lays out certain requirements, the second of which indicates that the Secretary shall adopt certification criteria to support the voluntary certification of health IT for use by pediatric health providers to support the health care of children. So, circling back to the slide that we now have in front of us, in response to this, ONC has developed 10 recommendations for the voluntary certification of health IT for pediatric care. This does not include creating a separate certification program for pediatric care and practice settings. We identified how these recommendations are supported by current and proposed new certification criteria that can support pediatric care and practice settings. And we also focus on non-regulatory initiatives that are nimble and responsive for stakeholders, including the development of informational resources that can support this setting specifically. Let's go to the next slide. Okay, this is an infographic that we also have available on our website. If you click into it, part of it will enable you to access other key information. What you see here are the 10 ONC recommendations for pediatric health IT for voluntary certification criteria. And then on the bottom, you'll see the summative listing of where we believe the 2015 edition criteria supports crosswalks and aligns with recommendations, and where we have proposed new edition criteria that also could support these priorities for the effective use of health IT in practice to execute these priorities in practice. On the very top, you can click on and access the children's EHR format. Information on the format was included as part of a background document for the committee, where we lay out some of the history and background of the children's EHR format as it involved our federal colleagues at CMS, AHRQ, HRSA, the leadership of key stakeholders throughout the years. And we also describe in the preamble more of the history and background and how this work has very much been informed and built upon a lot of the work that's gone into identifying those priorities over the years. Let me pause for questions or clarifying comments from the chair or co-chair for this slide.
I don't have any, thank you.
I just wanted to say how excited I am to see these recommendations. You know, a lot of this work has been conducted in the context of building the model EHR format and then fine-tuning it, and I'm very excited to see coming from ONC these recommendations that in the past have been perceived as high value for pediatrics.
Thank you. Can we move to the next slide? Okay. What I'd like to do is provide an organizational overview of the pediatric technical worksheets, and then we'll turn this over to Dr. Lehman, Chris, to walk through each recommendation. He'll describe the specific recommendation. He'll describe the functionality intent, providing context and background. And then Al Taylor, Dr. Taylor on the ONC, part of the ONC team, will specifically talk through where that recommendation is supported by 2015 edition criteria and where we believe it is supported by what we propose in this rule. In other words, the crosswalk of relevant criteria to support that priority in action. So the technical worksheets, I'm not sure if we're able to real-time click into this document and scroll throughout. If that's possible, super, wonderful. So this is a document that is in the appendix of the rule that is accessible on ONC's website. It was also attached as a separate PDF document. This will really be very useful to the work of this committee. What you'll see here is in the beginning, there are four overarching questions. Let's circle back to those questions after we go to the first recommendation so we can see how we lay this out. And then I think it would be helpful, and then we can go back and focus on what we were asking, particularly as it aligns to what's in the charge. So if we can scroll down to recommendation one, I'm just going to take a minute to identify how this is organized from a content perspective. First, we list the priority. Then below, again, we identify where it aligns with the children's EHR format and a description of the functionality intent as aligns with that from the format description. And then what you'll see is where we believe this recommendation is supported by the 2015 edition and the criteria that is relevant for that recommendation. And then if you scroll down a little bit more, you'll see where, again, we think that it aligns with proposed new or updated certification criteria based on what is in this rule. For the first, I think it's the first five or six recommendations, towards the end, you'll note we include supplemental children's format requirements. And here we include we're basically asking how these may be relevant to potentially be correlated to recommendation one. That is the context for why they are included. Let's circle back now to the top of the pediatric technical worksheet where we have the four overarching questions. Okay, great. So I'd like to focus on question three and question four. These we envision that the work group will be able to provide concise, clear recommendations here, particularly for number three. Should any of the 10 recommendations not be included? Is there one that should be removed or none? And then the fourth question really focuses on that crosswalk analysis, where we are asking for each specific recommendation, is there any functional criteria that's listed under the first part where we look at alignment with the 2015 edition, or the second part where we look at where we believe there's alignment with the proposed new or updated certification criteria? Is there anything here that should be removed as a correlated item to support the recommendation? In other words, you believe that this is not relevant to support the implementation of this priority in practice. That is the heart of question three and question four that lends itself to concise bulleted responses. Questions one and questions two are more narrative, and we think that these issues in terms of how this relates to safety concerns, impact of really looking at gaps and barriers and what can really impact or support the feasibility of this in practice, how the effective use of Health IT can support the recommendation as it pertains to issues such as workflow, provider training, other safety and usability considerations. These types of topics and narratives we think we can capture in bulleted narrative form organically through the discussions on each recommendation that begins with the kind of focus on questions three and questions four. So this is the document of the pediatric technical worksheets. I wanted to just walk through how it was designed to help capture the work to date and enable stakeholders to provide meaningful comment pertaining to these recommendations in our rule. Let me stop there again for clarifying comments from the chair and co-chair or any of the task force members before I turn this over really to Chris to walk through each recommendation and then to Al Taylor to just talk through at a high level the criteria. Our goal today is really to familiarize you with the recommendations and the worksheets And we envision that in future meetings, we'll really have more time to focus on each one, get deep, and focus on these questions that correlate to the charge.
Thank you. Yeah, I just want to emphasize that these four questions will be something that we will touching back onto with every one of the proposed requirements. So keep them in mind. Look into consider issues that would make it difficult for application of them in pediatric care. Look at for challenges to vendors. Look at any kind of unintended consequences that they might have that might actually be detrimental to pediatric care. And, these recommendations have a long history behind them in the pediatric EHR format, in the reduced recommendations from 2015. And then the final recommendations that were boiled down to 10. However, that doesn't mean that even though we have been talking about them for years, that doesn't mean they're sacrosanct. That doesn't mean that they cannot be modified or thrown out. So keep that in mind as well. These are important things that this group will discuss and provide recommendations for.
The only thing I can add to that is that we should also be thinking about what we recommend with regard to access by patients and parents and caregivers. It is also a part of ONC's larger mission to ensure and further patient access. Obviously, we won't have very small children doing that, but certainly in some cases their parents will need to do that. Adolescents will have an interest in accessing information. And it's important that we don't propose or recommend anything that might be a problem to make accessible via portals or APIs or through other means by which patients and parents might also want to look at their information.
Thank you. Are we now ready to walk through each specific recommendation? Dr. Lamenta, you can describe the functionality intent, and then Al, you can walk through some of the crosswalk analysis.
Sounds like a plan.
Okay. My suggestion would be that we scroll through the technical worksheets in real time as correlates to each recommendation that's being focused on. Thank you.
All right. So here we are at our first recommendation. Keep the four questions in mind. The title is a little awkward, Use of Biometric-Specific Norms for Growth Curves. But what it really means is that an electronic health record used in pediatric care shall be able to include the ability to use pediatric-specific norms for weight, height, length, head circumference, and BMI to calculate and display growth percentiles and plot them on one of the standard curves, either from the CDC or the World Health Organization, as appropriate. That's as appropriate refers to a cutoff, I think, that occurs at 2 years of age. So what this measure pretty much says is when you enter the height or the weight of your patient or the BMI, the system should be able to calculate, based on the age of the patient, what percentile the child is on, and should be able to plot out a trend so you can see in a visualization how the child is doing in form of growth and development. Turn it over at this point to Al.
Sure. So the 2015 edition certification criteria that we believe addresses these the concern about use of growth curves. Number one is the common clinical data set, which is used as the core data set for the consolidated document architecture, the CCDA. which is the standard document format that EHRs have to certify to. Within that common clinical data set are some optional criteria, including the metrics that Chris just went over, including the BMI, head circumference, length, and weight for length, and head circumference for age. So those are optional criteria, but they are, there are implementation standards for use of those vital signs in the optional pediatric vital sign data within the common clinical data set. Demographics, obviously, there's a standard for male and female, which obviously inform the growth curve, the different growth curves. In order to make use of the data and make better decisions for the data, the standard surrounding clinical decision support can take these numbers and alert the provider to deviations from the norm in order for them to make possibly make interventions. The application programming interface enables a variety of functionalities to either access access data from other sources or to populate data from other sources into the EHR, and we believe that those collectively address the concerns of the need for growth curve data, using growth curve data or data appropriately in the EHR. Along the proposed new criteria includes U.S. core data for interoperability, and that. You can think about this as an extension of the common clinical data set, and the vital sign data that we mentioned for the CCDS are included in that as well. And can you scroll down some or next page, please? And the same thing with the APIs. The update to the API standards is also in the proposed rule. So we believe that those those will also continue to address those needs. Sam, were we going to cover the supplemental requirements as well?
No, my recommendation is
additional criteria that were proposed as not the first line recommendations in those of the 10 criteria. These are related. Requirements that were proposed, but they're discussed here. So I think we can move on to recommendation number two.
Sam, a point of clarification. The discussion of those will be on subsequent calls, correct?
Correct. I think that these will be integrated into the focus of the recommendations when you roll up your sleeves in terms of then looking at the relevance of these for that overarching question.
Okay,
we do preliminary crosswalk analysis for each of these as well, and we lay that out here. In the interest of time for today's call, I think focusing on the key top-level recommendation.
Okay, that takes us then to recommendation number two, compute weight-based drug dosages. Recommendation includes that the EHR will compute the drug dose based on appropriate dose ranges using the patient's body weight or surface area, and shall display the dosing weight, the weight-based dosing strategy, when it's applicable, on the prescription. This is a safety feature. As you know, up to about 45 kilograms, most children require weight-based dosing or body surface-based dosing. The ability to show your work by displaying what weight was used for calculation and what dosing strategy was used allows a pharmacist or somebody who is administering the dose downstream to actually be able to double-check and verify that things were reached at the with an appropriate strategy, and adds safety to the medication dosing of children.
The With regard to weight-based dosing, the 2015 certification criteria does address this, although the requirement for the standard, which is the NCPDP script standard for electronic prescribing, has within it the ability to transmit weight and height and other information within the structured prescription, the structured SIG. That particular part of the NCPDP script standard was not adopted because of industry readiness in the 2015 rule. However, that capability within that same standard that was adopted in 2015 does exist, and that as this standard and the subsequent standard that replaces it is sort of rolled out, the capabilities do exist. Obviously it requires adoption for in order to implement these standards, but these standards will be able to address the requirements for weight-based dosing, weight and other metric-based dosing for peds and other settings as well, including ICU and other areas as well. As before, the U.S. Core Data for Interoperability standard contains the weight and other metric data that can be used to populate the e-prescribing standards, and believe that continues to support this requirement.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments to this one?
So this is Sue. I just want us to be mindful of timing. I don't know what the goal is for when this work is to be done, but we're in a position for now, for example, for vendors who have not finished or completed 2015 certification, where I can't ever say the letters in the right way, the pharmaceutical script standard, there are a lot of third parties are now making people go certify with the upgraded transmission of pharmaceutical information through the drug certification. And so they're sort of like, ONC is only prepared to test in the 2015 version with the old script, but people are moving to the new script. So we just got to be really mindful about not having disconnect about the timing of when we make recommendations and where the certification for e-prescribing timeline fits in that.
Okay, thank you. Shall we move into number three? So number three is a recommendation that focuses on the ability to access FIM family history, and there's an important subset, the data on guardians and caregivers. So the EHR shall be able to provide the ability to record information about all guardians and caregivers, which in this day and age is becoming increasingly complex. Biological parents, foster parents, adoptive parents, guardians, surrogates, custodians, etc. Siblings and caseworkers with contact information for each. The role as well as the contact information will be critical in order to provide the care coordination, do things like child abuse reporting, management of complex patients, and is vital to the work of pediatricians.
So with this, with the 2015 certification, the criteria that address this at least partially are the care plan, which is able to communicate the requirements between requirements for care between the providers who are jointly taking care of the patient. The care plan contains a good deal of information about the individual patient, the pediatric patient, which can be used to coordinate the care. The transitions of care the same way, in the same respect. The transition of care document is able to communicate between between providers using standardized health data. The API interface, the application programming interface, is also used for as a way to facilitate exchange of information between providers. And demographics has the ability to some extent, but probably not as extensive as required for the different multiple layers of both caregivers and custodians for the children, but it does have some ability to support that to identify parts of the parts of both the care team and the custodial arrangements for the children. Next the next page, please. And the same thing for for the proposed rule. The U.S. Core Data for Interoperability has the demographics information, as well as a number of different data elements regarding the kids, including the not the vital signs required for that data segmentation. Data segmentation for privacy in order to protect the information from disclosure for certain family members as well as for certain caregivers. The prior version protects the current version in 2015 protects the disclosure of these care plans and transition care documents from unauthorized disclosure. And the proposed rule for data segmentation allows for segmenting of more discrete data that's that can be designated for some of the information should and can be disclosed, and others should be protected from disclosure and redisclosure. And API again is an extension of the current API rule as well. Back to you, Chris.
Thank you. And you know, it's the transition here to the next one. You already made it, Al. We are talking next recommendation: segmented access to information, which you touched upon. The requirement includes the ability to segment healthcare data in order to keep information about minor consent services private. In the past, we always thought about adolescents and services related to STIs or pregnancy, but you know, with the recent discussions in Congress, we are also thinking about vaccination data. You know, we just saw this young man who was vaccinated when he turned 18 against his parental wishes. So the ability to keep services sequestered from those that shouldn't access them is a requirement that's recommended for the care of children. Al?
So we did cover this. The 2015 certification is limited in the ability to only have whole documents that some of which some of the information within the CDA document is appropriate for disclosure, but if the document the entire document is protected from disclosure and redisclosure, then there is some limitations to document level marking or security indications. With the proposed rule, down to the data element level is proposed to be enable the marking and segregation of discrete data. So some of the information about the child's care may be able to be more freely shared, but some of the more sensitive data, like Chris mentioned with STIs and pregnancy, those sorts of things can be marked for segmentation and non-disclosure. So that includes, so this what I just mentioned is on the next page as well with the proposed rule.
Thank you, Al. And just as a reminder to this group, the devil is in the details here. The most likely source of disclosure of information that actually should be prevented is in billing information. So that's an important issue to keep in mind when we talk about this later. So, all right. I think we're on to five. And the next item is the recommendation 5, synchronized immunization history with registry. It's pretty straightforward. The system shall support updating and reconciling a child's immunization record with information received from immunization information systems or other health information exchanges. It allows a pediatrician to identify immunizations that may have been given elsewhere to reduce duplicate immunizations, identify use immunization forecasting to predict immunizations that are needed, and schedule appropriate healthcare maintenance around immunization. Al?
So this particular criteria is probably the most specifically accomplished in the 2015 certification criteria, which does specifically include immunization history from the immunization registry in the state, as well as obtaining both. You get not only the information exchanged with the immunization registry is not only history, but also forecasting for required or recommended. Vaccinations, and this is provided directly back to the provider on request. And so this actually already meets the requirement. There are some variabilities in adoption of this standard and the variabilities in the availability of interstate immunization history, which is obviously pertinent in some settings. But this functionality already exists and is fairly widely implemented in EHRs and in most states. View, download, and transmit is the ability of individual patients or the representatives to download that information, and the information that has been incorporated into the record is the information that they're going to be able to get with view, download, and transmit. So that also addresses that requirement, although immunization history is not a specific. Is not specific to view, download, and transmit is not specific to immunizations, but it is part of the information that can be obtained with patient access to the record.
Thank you. Then moving on to recommendation 6, flipping back and forth here between my copy and online. Anyway, the recommendation 6 is age and weight specific dose range checking. My recommendation later when we are discussing this that we move this closer to the discussion about weight based dosing that we had, I think it was recommendation 2. Here the recommendation is that the system shall provide medication dosing decision support that detects drug doses that fall outside the maximum minimum range based on the patient's age, weight, and maximum recommended adult dose. Of course, if they're known. And maximum recommended pediatric dose for medications. You noted that there's an emphasis on maximum. When we talk about this, we'll talk about the value of minimum dose-based recommendation or the lack thereof. But this recommendation essentially will help people to stay with an appropriate range of drug dosing for pediatrics. Al?
Thanks. The issue about drug dose checking, both min and max, whether it's based on age or weight specific, is a functionality that is not contained within the e-prescribing standard, both either the standard or the implementation of the standard, although, as we said before, the ability to transmit age and weight through demographics and pediatric vital signs is there. The NCPDP implementation guide for the script standard acknowledges the fact that there is not embedded within that standard the ability to transmit dose range checking and dose range recommendations. They point instead to third party vendors to provide that, whether it's manufacturer provided or pharmacy services providing the information about dose range recommendations. So this is not a functionality that currently exists within the e-prescribing standard. Although some of the supplemental information, the supplemental information that you get through the vital signs is available. The decision support standard has the ability to access external dose range recommendations and provide information to the provider, but it is not integral to the e-prescribing standard or the e-prescribing functionality within the current EHR or in the proposed standards with the proposed rule. The USCDI again provides some supplemental information that can inform this, but the functionality does not exist in the certification at this time.
Thank you, Al. So I think this will be a hot topic for discussion. Let's move on to 7, which is transferable access authority. This recommendation reflects the reality that children don't stay children for the rest of their life. The system shall be able to provide the mechanism to enable access control that allows transferable access authority. For example, if a guardian changes or if a child becomes an emancipated minor or reaches adult age. I think this is a pretty straightforward requirement and will enable the transition of care from pediatrics to other specialty.
So the issue with transferable access is kind of the key phrase here. The ability to access the information is covered, is accomplished by the view, download, and transmit functionality in the standard within the current certification criteria. It is the transferable access that is dependent on the administration of the authorized representative, which is some specific language within the VDT standard, and it is how that authorization is granted and changed within each implementation that is really key. That authorized representation is going to be highly dependent on local state laws around security and privacy, and so that's not really realistic to say that an EHR standard can address each local authority requirements. But within the administration of the authority to access via VDT, believe that's taken care of, but it's taken care of outside of the certification requirements of EHRs.
Thank you. Then moving on to recommendation 8. This is a little bit different than other recommendations that we have seen so far. It's a little bit outside the standard recommendation box. Title is Associate Mothers Demographics with Newborn, and the recommendation states that the system shall provide the ability to associate identifying parent or guardian demographic information such as relationship to child, address, phone number, and email address for each individual child. Really, I think this aligns a little bit with the prior requirement about being able to document all patients, all guardians, stakeholders, case managers, etc. And I'm just going to stop here and turn it over to Al.
Oh, thanks. There are a number of electronic health records that have the ability to import maternal data into into newborn records, there is not currently a standard for that, but it is something that is practiced. It is something that is it is practiced in EHRs. The ability to put some of the information from the maternal data, which obviously is required, is really critical information for both labor and delivery as well as newborn care. Some of that information can be contained within care plan and transition to care documents, can be contained within family health history, including some of the social, psychological, and behavioral data that can be transmitted, that can be available with regard to the maternal social determinants of health. Obviously, will have an impact on the newborn determinants of health. And so, some of that information can be provided under these standards. However, there's not a well-developed way to standard way to import data from a specific relative, namely the mother, or a specific relative, namely any of the parents or siblings, transmit that information into the next record, whether it's inpatient to outpatient, newborn to pediatric, or from maternal to newborn. But some of this information can be transmitted using these methods under the current and the proposed certification criteria.
Thank you, Al, and thank you for going into the maternal data for the newborn. I think this is going to be a recommendation that will also play an important role when we discuss opioid use disorder and neonatal abstinence syndrome, because the maternal information about the morphine equivalent doses per day, for example, may play an important role for the long-term care of the child and the duration of hospitalization, et cetera. With that said, we're moving on to recommendation 9. Here we go. The recommendation is titled to track incomplete preventive care opportunities. I have to admit that this one is very near and dear to my heart. One of the things that pediatricians and family practitioners and those who take care of children do and do well is to provide preventive measures and to screen children based on recommendations that ultimately lead to long-term improved health and outcomes. And we specifically refer to in this recommendation to the Bright Futures from the American Academy of Pediatrics that has a recommendation for well child visits and interventions that should, you know, that should be done during this visit that can include things like hemoglobins at the age 1 to test for anemia, developmental screenings, etc. So this is this measure will suggest that the system should provide recommendation, a list, for children that have missed these recommended health supervision visits or interventions, and help with decision support to providers. Al?
Thank you. The good news here is the capabilities in the electronic health record are capable, and they have always been capable to detect both before the fact and after the fact, detect a number of different clinical criteria, including the presence or absence of immunizations, presence or absence of vital signs or blood tests, or any number of different things. And they the EHRs do this through either clinical decision support, which can provide information based on existing data to the provider in order to provide care at the point of care, at the time of care. The clinical quality measures, as anybody who reports to Medicaid or Medicare understand, is typically after the fact, but it can provide a measure of how well a provider is complying with those recommendations. The the key problem right now is most of the Bright Futures recommendations and other healthcare maintenance recommendations have not been codified into electronic clinical quality measurement or electronic clinical decision support, although the technology exists, and with some investment, both by the government, Medicaid or Medicare, or with other stakeholders like the AAP, those kinds of that kind of technology or that kind of measurement and decision support can be implemented using current technology. It's just that it has not been; those rules have not been packaged together in a way that can be of assistance for providers. Chris? Might still be muted. Might be muted again.
My apologies. I was talking. Thank you for reminding me. I think this was a great summary, Al, about some of the challenges associated with Bright Futures. We have some data related to that about decidability and actionability. So those are good comments, and I think we'll have a healthy discussion around this. And I think, as you pointed out, there is a need for some of the stakeholders to go back and work on the recommendations in a way that it becomes easier to be implementable.
And Chris, I will say that. Sorry, I just wanted to say, and I didn't point this out specifically, but some of the Bright Futures recommendations have been implemented and are currently part of program clinical quality measurements for providers. It's just not there's just not that many at this time.
Yeah, and there's a fascinating article by Steve Downs and his group about the decidability and actionability of Bright Futures, and I think there's potential to improve. Moving on to number 10, title is Flag-Specific Healthcare Needs. The recommendation is that we should have the ability for providers to flag or unflag individuals with specific healthcare needs, complex conditions who may benefit from care management, decision support, care planning, and this flagging should support reporting such as quality measures. So the use case here is the individuals with diabetes or asthma that require special attention or special care management or care planning. And it is something that is not necessary pediatric specific, but might be very useful for adult patients as well. Al?
Right, and again, those specific examples that you provided are good examples because they point to existing both quality measurement and decision support around the care of patients with specific diagnoses. There are quality measurements in place in implementation around care of asthmatics, although it does not necessarily include presence or absence of an asthma action plan. The care of diabetes includes some of the specific requirements for long-term care for diabetics. So these are implemented in clinical decision support and in particular the clinical quality measurements. And so identifying what those rules are and taking the next step to codifying them into these decision support and quality measure artifacts are using the current technology, using the 2015 certification criteria are very much like the Bright Futures recommendations, is work to be done, but it's work to be done with the current implemented technology.
Thank you, Al. So that then leads, I think that's the list of recommendations, and I'm going to turn it over back to Sam.
Thank you so very much. So I want to thank Dr. Lehman and Dr. Taylor for walking us through the recommendations and the granular crosswalk analysis. We hope that this was really helpful as you prepare for the subsequent discussions where we roll up our sleeves and really revisit these in a deeper, more focused manner. I'd like to turn now to, let's go to the next slide. Okay, so as we mentioned on the top of the call, part of the charge involves a request for information that we have as part of the care continuum section of the Notice of Proposed Rulemaking. Let's go to the next slide. Okay, on this slide, what we've identified is that Section 6 of the rule that addresses the health IT for the care continuum obviously has a significant part with the health IT for pediatric setting. That's found in Section 6A. Section 6B is the request for information on health IT and opioid use disorder prevention and treatment, or what we refer to as an RFI. On this slide, we have a general sense. This really correlates to when you look at the preamble of the RFI, what we indicate is that we have identified several 2015 edition certification criteria that are available now for certification in the program that we think could support some of the clinical priorities and that could support some of the functions related to opioid use disorder prevention and treatment. So, similar to what we just walked through with pediatrics, we lay out what we believe the existing or proposed or new criteria are that we think are relevant to supporting OUD prevention or treatment. Some of these include, for example, transitions of care or some of the patient health information capture, and we go through and we list out this criteria. For purposes of what we're asking the committee here to do, we're not asking for a granular crosswalk analysis of defining or identifying what those clinical priorities are or how they would crosswalk to specific criteria. Rather, what we're asking is your general sense of how our program holistically as can support OUD-related prevention and treatment. In other words, the value and relevance for the approach for informing OUD prevention and treatment. So we welcome input on that. Again, we're not asking for the granular analysis. I hope that is clear. But generally, you know, is it valuable? Is it important? What is your general sense of what we laid out in applying this three-part approach to OUD as part of this RFI? So that is more of a holistic input for the general sense question. If you go to the next slide, here's where we have more targeted topics of focus for the committee to focus on. As Chris referred earlier, a large part of this involves the neonatal abstinence syndrome, or NAS. As we indicated earlier, the data segmentation for privacy. And then there is a part in the RFI that focuses on electronic prescribing and prescription drug monitoring programs. So these three topics, NAS and DS4P, and we break down some of the areas of focus for the committee to really hone in addressing these aspects that are contained in the request for information. Let me just point to, so the data segmentation for privacy is included, that proposal is in section what Al walked through under existing, under new or proposed, that is in section 4 of the rule number 7, I believe, and that is the B12 and B13 as relates to the CCDA, and then as relates to FHIR, that is the G11. So what we're asking for here is really that how that proposal and the other section of the rule is your input as it relates to OUD prevention and treatment, so applicability of that proposal through that OUD lens. And then obviously as part of the analysis and input on the pediatric recommendations as it relates to the pediatric setting and use case as well. So those are three key topics of focus that we are excited to have you provide some insights and information to us on. Let me pause there for clarifying. I want to reintroduce Zoe Barber, my colleague at ONC, who's also supporting our work here. And let me just see if there are any clarifying comments here, either by the chair or co-chair, or by from any ONC team members as pertains to the OUD content.
I don't have any questions. Thank you.
So I have a general question. This is Sue.
clearly some of this is not my specific expertise, especially some of the PDMP stuff, but I have access to people who it is their expertise. As part of this task force, are we allowed to cast a wider net so we can be better informed and bring a broader view to the discussion?
This is Lauren from ONC. Yes, absolutely. If there's a specific subject matter expertise that we would bring additional insight to the group, I'm happy to invite them for a future call.
Great. I'll follow up offline.
Excellent question, Sue. Thank you.
Any other clarifying questions or comments? Okay, thank you. I think next on the agenda, and we are on time, is review of the work plan, and then we would open it up for public comment. So let's transition now to, thank you, the work plan slide. So Caroline and Chris, did you want to walk through this, or would you prefer the ONC team to go through some of the timing here and have Lauren and Stephanie walk through this?
I can talk through that, thanks. So this is kind of our general timeline and the guiding document that we'll use as we work through this large multi-part charge. As you can see, today we're having our kickoff, and we've gone through all of the work that we will be doing over the next few weeks. In general, our meetings are scheduled for Friday mornings early. We felt that was a good time for everybody to be able to get on the phone. I think it's also helpful for Chris and I and the ONC staff in that if there are things that we need to accomplish, we then have a weekend handy to get a start on that so that we can be prepared for the following task force meeting. On Friday, we will start getting into the discussion, and I think looking at the 10 recommendations first, considering how we need to update or revise or perhaps delete those if that's appropriate. We anticipate that will continue for a couple of weeks. And then at the March 19 and 20 meeting here in just a couple of weeks, Chris and I will present a review of what we have accomplished, what the work group has accomplished so far to the full HITAC. We will continue on with another 3 meetings to continue refining these recommendations and providing new ones for the additional topic areas that we have in our charge. And then there will be another update to the full HITAC committee on April 10. You're welcome to dial into those meetings if you'd like. The information about calling in and an agenda will be made public in advance, so you can do that in a time-efficient fashion. We have another task force meeting on April 19, where we'll continue our work. And then towards the end of April, we'll be presenting the final recommendations to the HITAC if we haven't finalized those sooner. In the last week of April and into May, ONC will be preparing the final transmittal letter for the full HITAC. And then those recommendations from HITAC are submitted to NC and regulations.gov on or before May 3rd. So things will be moving fairly quickly, but I think for us, in that we're able to have weekly meetings, it kind of helps the structure around that, and hopefully will create a efficient and easy to manage way for all of you to give us input and help keep the task force moving. Do you have any thoughts to share, Chris, about the work plan or the timeline?
Nope, you covered it all, Caroline.
Then I think this is a good time to take any questions from the task force members or from ONC, or if there's anything else we need to clarify.
No questions from me. This is Chip.
I'm good.
Okay. Well, it sounds like we are set to go as far as getting started with our work plan on Friday. So I will hand it back to Lauren for the public comment period.
Thanks, Carolyn. At this time, operator, can you please open the line for public comment?
Certainly. If you'd like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue, and you may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Great. And I know we're just a few minutes ahead of schedule, so Sam or Stephanie or Zoe, or if there's anything else that you want to cover in the last 10 or 12 minutes or so, let me know. Otherwise, we will adjourn. And then for the ONC staff and the chairs, if we end early, we'll just immediately jump to our debrief call. Operator, do we have any comments in the queue at this time?
We have not at this time.
And were there any other task force members that joined later that I didn't catch at the roll call? Okay, just want to make sure that we didn't miss Raj. Okay, with that, I will turn it back to our co-chairs for any closing remarks. Unless Sam or Stephanie, if you have anything else.
I would just offer to the task force members all of the attachments for this kickoff meeting. Several of them contain useful background information and some background reading that our chair and co-chair collated as well. So there is a lot of content by way of background that we aim to provide to support your endeavors here.
Having been on a lot of these meetings, I will tell you that your background material is much better than what we usually get. So thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I think with that, I will just conclude my part of the meeting by thanking everyone for coming this morning and sitting patiently as we go through our charges. I'm really excited about diving into the work on Friday and am happy to be a resource or a source of assistance as you work through the very specific details of these recommendations. Thanks for joining, and I'm looking forward to working with you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for the opportunity. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Thank you.